Heat Media Day is on Monday, so we'll be answering key questions to kick off the season in our third of three episodes, talking about Eric Spoelstra's coaching, if Jimmy Butler can be even better this season, and which rotation player has the best chance of stepping up. It's five burning questions, training camp edition on today's Locked On Heat.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. It's a Friday edition of Locked On Heat, your daily podcast covering all things Miami Heat. However, you may be listening or watching on YouTube, Odyssey, or on your favorite podcast app. Thanks so much for making us your first listen every day. I'm David Ramil, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Wes Goldberg, with Heat Training Camp just a few days away. Just over the weekend, we'll be ramping up our coverage, asking the big questions you need answers to. Just make sure to subscribe to the show to ensure that you get everything you need every day. We're continuing our five burning questions training camp editions with our third of three episodes. Make sure to check out the previous two episodes if you haven't. We've talked about the coaching drama in Boston, lineup changes, which player steps up, and so much more. We'll be answering some more of those kind of questions today. We're going to be limiting our answers to just 5 minutes per question, and we'll start off with this one about Eric Spoelstra. How can Eric Spoelstra get the most out of this particular group, Wes? I think it's going to be a very challenging year for Spoelstra without his, one of the players that he certainly came to admire a great deal, and P.J. Tucker, now with the Philadelphia 76ers. So what do you think Eric Spoelstra has to do in order to get the most out of this group after some friction last season?
Yeah, you don't mean to overstate the loss of P.J. Tucker and just how important that is, but Spoelstra talked a lot last year about how P.J. allowed them to do so many different things stylistically. Now, this is a really good question. It is going to change what it is that Miami does. Let's start with the defensive part of the ball. This is going to change how often the Heat switch. They switched basically everything last season. In large part, that was because P.J. Tucker could guard everything 1-5, and Bam Adebayo obviously can guard everything 1-5. If you look at when you have two of those kinds of guys, not to mention Jimmy, who could guard 1-4, Kyle Lowry, who's probably 1-3, kind of 1-4 in a pinch. That basically allows you to switch as much as they did. It's not going to be the same this year. Bam Adebayo, obviously still a perennial defensive player of the year candidate, maybe the best switchable defender in the NBA at this point, right? Yeah. But even that downgrade from PJ Tucker to Jimmy Butler at the four, Caleb Martin, or whoever it is that ends up starting, if they do move Tyler Hero up into the starting lineup, all these things are going to impact dramatically what it is that they could do defensively. I don't think they'll switch as much. I think we'll see a little bit more zone. I think we'll see a little bit more blitzing. I think we can see a little bit of a return to that big three style of defense. Because remember, that
flying
was the
death
that
machine,
started the flying death machine, perhaps. But if Bam could do his Chris Bosh impression, which he can, he's a better defender than Chris Bosh was, and Chris Bosh was awesome. But you basically go back to those teams starting Shane Battier at the four alongside LeBron. Could you do a little bit more of maybe less switching, more blitzing and helping, stuff like that? So I think stylistically, defensively, we could see a return to that. I think it'll be multiple looks. We'll see the switching. We'll see the drop coverage when they're playing Deadman or Yurtsevin at center. We'll see a lot. We'll see the zone, obviously. But I think we might see a little bit more blitz and help and kind of recover stuff like that, too, in order to utilize this team's speed.
Yeah, I think so. My thought process with the question was more of an off-the-court thing, because I just – We've seen it before around other teams, and it's just so hard to find ways of motivating this group. And you'd like to think as a fan that these people are all self-motivated, and there's no doubt about that. They all are motivated by different things, and they all want to win for the most part. This Heat team, more than most, probably committed to winning. But look, there was the friction last year with Jimmy. There was the falling short in the Eastern Conference Finals. There is the loss of Tucker. There's other things regarding this roster. You know, we talked about in another episode, the off-season issues, you know, Tyler's being included in trade talks. How do you get Duncan back into the rotation? All these different things weighing on these players. How does Spo find a way of motivating them in year 15 of his professional coaching tenure? Like he's had so many different incarnations of this team. And even now with Jimmy, like this is Jimmy's fourth season with a team, and there have been different versions of this team during each of those four seasons. How does he find new ways of motivating everybody, getting them all on the same page, finding a common goal to work towards, and winning just isn't enough. You can't just say, well, we want to make the finals and then just trot 15 guys out there and hope that you go ahead and win 60 something games. That doesn't work this way at the NBA. You have to be able to bond with your players. You have to be able to connect with them. You have to find some common ground there, open lines of communication. You've got a number of players on this roster that are going to be fighting for minutes, fighting for salary, fighting for upcoming contracts. Yeah. Those things can boil over. And
but they
really
can also be motivating factors, David. I'm not concerned about Spo's ability to connect with this team at all. I think that this team will be motivated if, like, the culture is strong enough in Miami. And I don't mean to sort of pound the table and be culture guy here, but
there you are.
That is sort of what it is that they do, right?
Yeah,
is they kind of always are able to unlock. If you could get the most out of James Johnson and Deion Waiters in that group, I think they'll be able to figure this one out.
Hey, why you gotta throw Deion under the bus like that? Why you gotta throw Deion under the bus? That's unfair.
Can you have a kennel anymore without PJ Tucker? Because it kind of felt like he was the lead dog. Yeah.
No such thing.
No kennel. New nicknames. We'll see.
Yeah, that'll be our toughest challenge over the course of the season is finding a way to nickname this
team.
They'll
figure it out.
I guess so. Yeah, but you can't give yourself a nickname. I know the kennel thing.
They did last year.
Well, I guess you're right. But, you know, there was also
getting themselves. Dwayne Wade gave himself nicknames for years.
Have you ever heard any one person refer to World of Wade before or calling him Wow? Not a one.
No.
We don't like disparaging Dwayne Wade on this podcast.
Three was not great either.
Oh.
It was Flash. It always Shaq gave him the best one. It was Flash ever since Shaq got into Miami, and it's Flash ever since. It's Flash or D. Wade. That's his nickname. Next question.
Yeah, you know what? We should ask Jimmy that on media day. What's the best nickname for Dwayne?
There you go.
He probably just calls him Dwayne. Anyway, this next question. Well, we got a question about Jimmy Butler, but you know what? We're going to save that for the next segment because I think it's worth putting a pin in there because there's so much to talk about when it comes to Jimmy. He's the star of this team. He carries his team, but does he have to do even more because of the loss of PJ Tucker and the potential style changes to the roster? We'll talk about that in the next segment. But before we do that, BetOnline.net, your number one source for football betting info this season. You can find all the latest player developments, team matchups, news, podcasts, and in-depth articles and analysis on every game you can find. I know there's a big matchup for the Dolphins this week. Who you got in that matchup there against the Bills?
Look, I think the Bills will win, but I think the Bills can win the whole thing. I think they win the Super Bowl. That said, look, if the Dolphins lose, let's not make it an indictment on the Dolphins season. I think the Dolphins will go to the playoffs. I think they're going to be really good. I just don't think they're as good as the Buffalo Bills, but that's okay. I have another line that I'm looking at. The Chiefs, just 2.5-point favorites over the Indianapolis Colts. The Colts stink. The Chiefs are awesome. They cover all the time. The Chiefs only getting 2.5 points. I know they're on the road, but that seems crazy to me. I would take the Chiefs. Give me 2.5 points. Crazy.
All I'm hearing is trade Tua from you. I'm sorry. As always, BetOnline remains your continued source for all your sport wagering information with live betting and up-to-the-minute scores for every sport out there. The fastest and easiest way to check in on all your favorite games and events, you can head to BetOnline.net or use your mobile device to learn more. BetOnline, where the game starts. Thanks for making Locked On Heat your first listen every day. And just a reminder, you can always reach us via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or via Twitter using the hashtag AskLaHeat. Be sure to please subscribe to the show and leave a review. Look, we're going to be sitting down with players, your Miami Heat players, in just a couple of days. We want to ask them a bunch of questions, and we know that you probably have questions you'll want to ask too. So send those in via email, via Twitter. Reach out to us. You can always let us know what you want to hear from them, and I'm sure they'll be happy to answer that because players love media day. And you know, no player more than Jimmy Butler, I think, who will be happy to answer all sorts of questions about the coffee business, what he did over the summer, his off-season workout regimen, and all those things gearing up towards him being an MVP type candidate, not necessarily a top five-ish player, but certainly a top 10 player in the NBA. But does he have to be even better this season in order to carry this Heat group? It's something that we've talked about off and on. We've kind of like danced our way around it, but this roster has some holes in it. Is this team going to be expecting more from Jimmy in order to achieve the success that they're gearing up for?
I would like to see more of playoff Jimmy Butler than regular season Jimmy Butler. And I love regular season Jimmy Butler. He's a team first guy. He gets his teammates involved. He plays great defense. He's still a two-way force throughout the entire regular season. But I'd like to see more of that playoff stuff that we saw from, not just from a scoring perspective, David, but I want to see the uptick in three-point shooting. Specifically, that's what I'm looking at, right? Because this is a team that's going to need to space the floor a little bit more. We just got done talking about Spo and some of the stylistic changes that he might want to make. I think this team, and you've said this, 40 to 45 three-pointers a game, okay? that can't just be Tyler Hero, Max Strus, and Duncan Robinson taking 10 threes each, right? Yep. It's not going to work that way. Jimmy Butler needs to take, he doesn't have to take a ton, but if he could take 3 or 4 a game, I think that's a good number. He's been working on the shot. We've heard him talk about it over and over again. His teammates would tell us all the time, Jimmy Butler makes this shot in practice all the time. We can see him making it. And then in the playoffs, he makes the shot, David. Like, I don't know why he almost sent the Heat to the finals with a three-pointer, right? Mm-hmm. If it was an inch higher,
don't remind me.
The Heat are in the finals. And so I would like to see that. That part I would like to see his game transition more in the regular season, because I think that could help Miami's overall offense so much, because now you're spacing the floor for Bam, and now that's making his life easier. You want to get 15 quality shots for Bam. That's one way to do it, is to space the floor a little bit more. That's what I want to see from Jimmy in the regular season.
Yeah, I was all ready to say, no, they don't need him to be better, because we saw him miss a bunch of games last year. We've seen him miss games on and off over the last couple of seasons of his Heat tenure. We know he's going to be bogged down by nagging injuries at some point, because he just plays at a different level, because he's so physical, because he's probably never going to be 100% healthy at this point in his career and his life. So I wouldn't want to put him out there and force undue stress. But having said that, the three-point shot, not necessarily a stressful one, right? It's not going to be additional wear and tear on his wrist or on his ankle or his knees or any kind of lingering hip injury or anything like that.
If anything, it'll preserve him, right? We've seen LeBron do this, kind of gravitating.
And we didn't see Dwayne Wade do it. Yeah, and we didn't see
Dwayne. It's the kind of thing that players start to do as they age and extends their prime just a little bit more, because obviously, too, you want to keep your scoring numbers up. Well, you start taking more threes, that shot's worth more than the twos. That's one way to keep your scoring numbers up, too.
I wonder who it was in last year's locker room, and we heard Jimmy say this specifically. My teammates keep telling me to take that three. Was it PJ? Was it Bam? Was it Kyle? Because somebody needs to be in his ear at the start of the season to be like, take those threes, take those threes, take those threes. And I mean, well, if we get the opportunity, we'll remind him of that, because we'd like to see that uptick from him. And just, again, as a preservation factor, like just for him to be able to stay healthy and be out there and still be able to impact defenses. You know, just the idea of Jimmy taking threes is enough to draw in defenses, bend defenses, create opportunities for others to dive to the rim. We've seen Kyle be able to mix and attack the paint. Tyler, Victor, whoever's in that starting lineup will take advantage of these opportunities too. So Jimmy absolutely needs to change things up, and one way of doing so. And
I'll just add this before the timer goes off here. If Jimmy Butler does end up starting at the four and the Heat are playing super small, then everything we said is true, but also to the point of the question, they will need the best Jimmy Butler season they've ever gotten, because that team is going to be relying a lot on Jimmy Butler if he's starting at the four in a super small group.
Quickly, what does that look like? What does the best Jimmy Butler season for the Heat look like in terms of scoring?
Looks like the playoffs. Yeah, it looks like the playoffs. I mean,
25 points per game, something like
25 to 28 points a game. Rebounding a lot. If rebounding 8-9 rebounds a game, something like that. Wow. It's just a lot. That's why I keep saying he's probably not the best option at the four, because you're just asking him to do so much. Where really, if you're the Heat, you're playing for the playoffs.
Well, somebody who may get some opportunity in the playoffs, Duncan Robinson, obviously, in and out of the lineup last year, fighting for rotation minutes. And now with the start of the season, another offseason to kind of tweak his game and find another way of continuing to be an impact player, regardless of his contract. Does Duncan Robinson earn a spot in the rotation this season, Wes? What do you think?
I think some of this has been overblown. In the playoffs, yes, Duncan Robinson is out of the rotation. The rotation also shortens in the playoffs. Duncan Robinson is, I know he lost his starting job, but he wasn't out of the rotation during the regular season. I think Duncan Robinson is going to be a prominent part of the rotation. I don't really know why we're having this conversation as if he's fighting for minutes. He's going to get minutes. Look, I'll name the players who are going to get minutes. Kyle Lowry, Gabe Vincent, Tyler Hero, Max Strus, Jimmy Butler, Victor Oladipo, Caleb Martin, Haywood Highsmith, Bam Adebayo, Dwayne Dedman. That's 10 right there. Duncan Robinson would be your 11th man. I'm sorry, I'm not even sure if Haywood Highsmith is going to be in there. So it'd probably be Highsmith playing a few minutes, but Duncan Robinson playing a bunch of minutes. I think Duncan's probably your 10th man in the rotation. That's about, Spoelstra will go 10 or 11 deep routinely in the regular season. So I think Duncan Robinson to be a part of the rotation. That to me is not the question. The question is where. He's going to be behind Tyler and Max in terms of shooting guard, right? And that's where Duncan started last season. But Duncan Robinson's also 6'7". He could play small forward. Heck, given how small Miami might be to start the season, he might see some time at the other forward spot. Whether we call it power forward or small forward, he could be spending time next to Jimmy Butler at a forward position too. So there'll be minutes for Duncan Robinson. I'm not concerned about that at all.
Yeah, I think the reason why he started to fall out more again is PJ Tucker. Like with him in the lineup and him playing as many minutes as he did because he could focus so much on just the defensive factor, the side of the ball there. I think, you know, there wasn't as much of an opportunity for him. You were getting that 3-point shooting from other players, including especially Max Strus. Now with PJ out, you're going to see Caleb Martin. Can he avoid foul trouble? I think that's something to consider because he's a physical defender, because he, you know, he doesn't have that reputation where he's going to get away with a lot of the calls and things of that sort. He's probably not going to be as foul prone as Duncan has been in the past, but you wonder, you know, if he's starting, and we assume that he might be, whether or not, you know, he'll be able to stay on the floor as much, and who else can fill in if Caleb winds up getting into foul trouble. So Duncan's certainly going to get some playing time there. Where is a big question too. I'd like to see some experiments with him at the other forward spot. I think he has a size. We talked about the speed not being as much of a disadvantage. He probably won't be victimized as much. I think he's strong enough to hold his own. We've seen him have plays there on occasion. I wish I could recall something specific, but I know that there have been specifically good possessions with him covering a big or something like that, and he's held his own because he's strong enough.
They can go, and Duncan's a really good team defender. You and I had talked about this a lot last season. Yeah. And in the zone, he could be a helpful piece in the zone. Look, he needs to cut down the fouling. That's the easiest way to get yourself off the court is to just get yourself into foul trouble. And he did a lot, especially towards the end of last year when he was targeted so much. But that was really in the playoffs, too, where we saw that. I think Duncan Robinson, and look, he knows he needs to do better, right? He talks about this very openly on his podcast about how, you know, he needs to get better defensively. He wants to try to find ways to get more quicker laterally and all these things. There's obviously a limit on his athleticism. I think that's fair. But I also think he can be better. I think he could be better. And by the way, to go back to the stylistic point that we were making earlier, if you're trying to get to 40, 45 threes a game, you gotta think about the pathway to get to that, don't you? And Duncan Robinson's could be a big part of that.
Yeah. I mean, no hesitation from him when it comes to shooting. He's certainly going to put up his shots, even in limited minutes. And he's your best shooter. Like, he's still your best shooter. With Tyler Herro out there, Max Strus out there, I think Duncan is still your best shooter. You can, you know, he might not bend the offense the way he once did. You're not going to be running those constant screen actions with him and Bam as much as you once did. But it doesn't take much daylight for him to get that shot up, and he's still a deadly shooter. Historically good. The contract changed everyone's perception of him. It was so needless. I hate contract talk with him. And I don't think it's going to play a factor for those of you who might think, well, he has to get minutes because you're paying him that much. That doesn't mean anything. It didn't mean anything last year. It's not going to mean anything this year. Eric Spoelstra's not paying that money, and he doesn't care how much he got signed for. You have to earn your way onto the court. Let's see if Duncan is able to do so. But we've got some questions about some other rotation players like Gabe Vincent, Max Strus, and more coming up in the next segment. So stay tuned right here on Locked On Heat. Thanks for making Locked On Heat your first listen every day. Can Gabe Vincent be the next Fred VanVleet? With Kyle Lowry as the mentor on this roster, it seems like that's an easy way of shoehorning Vincent. But we also saw an evolution from him where he was just a feisty defender, an all-around player, a guy who just makes positive things happen and was able to knock down big shots over the course of the season and in the playoffs. Can he evolve to the next VanVleet, especially in the middle of a contract year where he's looking to get paid next season? What do you think, Wes?
Probably not. I mean, Fred VanVleet is he's an all-star point guard, man. That was too quick.
There we go. Who needs 5 minutes? Thanks a lot.
Look, I think Gabe Vincent could be a really good backup point guard in this league. I don't anticipate that he'll ever be a starter. I don't anticipate that he'll ever be an all-star. Fred VanVleet is an all-star point guard. It's a great story, but it's an exceptional story for a reason, because you just don't see it happen all that often. To ask Gabe Vincent to go from playing in Stockton in the G League to being an all-star player within a matter of a career is wild. I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm saying it's extremely improbable. But I do think Gabe Vincent is a really important part of this Heat team. I think there are times when Gabe Vincent outplayed Kyle Lowry last season. I think that's very fair to say. Yeah. I think the Heat love Gabe Vincent, and I think Eric Spoelstra trusts Gabe Vincent. Gabe Vincent might be a starter one day down the line. It's a contract year for him.
He's been a starter.
Been a starter.
Yeah.
A full-time starter, I should say. But
no, you're right.
It's a contract year for him. It's a contract year for him, also for Max Strus, also for Omer Yurtseven. What I'm really intrigued to look at starting in training camp and all through the season, David, is the Heat aren't going to bring all three of those guys back. They can't. There's just no way to do it. So which one of them do they bring back? And I think I don't know what they would do if they had to make that decision right now. I really don't. But I would guess, and there's no reporting behind this, I would guess they would probably pick Gabe Vincent.
Ooh. It's an interesting choice. And I was just thinking about it right now. It's like you have the opportunity to sign Goran Dragic, somebody who's beloved in the organization, as your backup, and you don't do it. Why? Because you're confident in what Gabe brings to the table.
Yeah. And maybe Goran out there saying, I wouldn't have gotten playing time in Miami. That doesn't mean that there wouldn't have been backup. Like Kyle Lowry's obviously there, but so is Gabe Vincent, to your point. It's a good one.
Right. So, they're obviously believers in what he can do. They love his efforts. They love his evolution. The fact that he's continued to grow and adapt over the couple of seasons where he's found his footing. Like, I'll never forget his first practice as a member of the Heat and being introduced as, a guy who can space the floor and bring hot shooting and things of that sort. And then, it takes him a while. Like, he played through the Orlando bubble. He played that COVID-shortened season, yeah. And he didn't really have an identity. And then this year, he just evolved into this really feisty, scrappy, just do it all kind of guy who leaves his heart out there and does everything he can. Like I don't think enough fans appreciated Gabe last year and the spark that he provided, because there were a lot of instances where he was a spark plug, where he was just a guy who was willing to get it done and not afraid of the big shot either in big moments in the playoffs, taking big shots against Joel Embiid and anybody else in the playoffs. Like, he was willing.
That's the thing I would like to see I would like to see that more from Gabe this year. And remember, the Heat brought him in as sort of an off-ball scoring guard, turned him into this 3-and-D type of player, a game manager at the one position who can guard his position at a high level. But now maybe we see them tilt a little bit more and let him unlock some of that natural scoring ability, to your point, like we saw last year so often. Like, he's got like an interesting little mid-range game that I'd like to see him get more to. There's definitely a higher level of Gabe Vincent. Whether or not that means Fred VanVleet or not, there's a higher level to Gabe Vincent that I think we'll start to see this season.
Can he play more off-ball? Can you see two lineups with him and Lowry out there?
Yeah, I love that look. Yeah.
I mean,
two really good defenders. Like, they're a little bit small, but like we've been saying, like, the Heat are already – they're starting from a position of small anyway. So if you're going to be small, what's the best small looks that you can put together? And some of those looks over the course of a game might look like Lowry and Gabe together.
Yeah, I totally see that, especially like you're going up against the Cleveland Cavaliers. And I mean, I know that's the prime example, but you got Darius Garland, Donovan Mitchell, both undersized. Throw your undersized guards out there, both of whom are defensive forces and can limit those two players. So I think that should be exciting. We'll wrap up today's show with this last question. Will Max Strus's defense keep improving? Because we certainly saw it take leaps and bounds last year. What's next for him on the defensive end, Wes?
Not to echo my last answer too much, but not much. I think
You're killing me.
The Max Strus that we saw last year was better than I think we anticipated defensively. He was targeted still, right? And that was a talking point for him. He took that as a personal challenge, and he stood up to that challenge. I brought up the stat the other day on the show. He had a 50% win rate against defending in isolation. That's average. It's okay. And I think average and okay is a lot better than what most people anticipated when Max Strus went undrafted a few years ago. Look, he's long, he's athletic, but he's not the greatest athlete, and he's not the longest dude. He's not the biggest guy. I think that there's a ceiling to what he could do athletically, right? And that's fair. I mean, there is a ceiling to everybody. I think his ceiling is probably average to above average on defense. That's fine. The way that he makes threes, I think Max Strus's best case scenario is a bona fide 3-and-D player, which are such valuable commodities in today's NBA. He gets compared a lot to Duncan Robinson. I don't think has that ceiling defensively. He's probably got a higher ceiling as a 3-point shooter just because he's taller and has a quicker release than Max Strus does.
Yeah.
But Strus could be a legit 3-and-D guy who could plug into any kind of lineup, who's not going to take a whole lot off the table defensively. And that's what he is. That's good. He's not going to be elite. He's not going to be awesome. You're not switching him onto fours or fives, okay? But he can hold his own. He could probably guard three different positions credibly, and that's good for them, right? He's not gonna be getting a bunch of steals. He's not gonna be racking up a bunch of stats. He can just hold his own.
Yeah, this is one of the most interesting things here. Is like, we saw him take that leap in season, but that bar was already so low as he was trying to find his identity at the NBA level, that there was nowhere to go but up, right? I mean, he couldn't have gotten much worse than what he was. And we saw him have that big summer league breakout, and everybody was, had high expectations. Certainly the team saw something in him, and which is why they signed him to that contract. But then he takes the in-season leap, which is not something I expected. Now he has a full offseason of work. He looks lighter from what we've seen over him over the summer, and he's not one to post a lot of stuff online. We don't see a lot of videos of him. training or shooting or anything like that, because we know what he's capable of. But we did see some footage of him from a pro-am game, et cetera. He does look a little lighter. He's a little leaner, maybe. That's going to help. A lot of video scouting, I think, is certainly essential for him. Like, I mean, the best defenders in the league do it. Bam has talked to me about, you know, how much video he watches, how essential it is for him to understand other players' tendencies as he's become an all-NBA defender. So a player like Max or Duncan, to that point, or anybody, can certainly benefit from that, just watching those tendencies. And now that he understands the game, that he's had the familiarity of playing against some of these other guys in the NBA, now he has to take it to the next step. I think he's going to be better. I think he is going to be better as a defender. So I think it's going to be a combination of those things, both physical, mental, preparation, all that gearing up towards a better season from him. And yet somehow he might still not wind up starting, but still a heavy part of the rotation. So it's going to be a conundrum. It's nothing fair. Nothing that's simple fair.
I think marginal improvement should be expected. And maybe I was being, maybe I blew it off.
Too harsh on him, man.
Yeah. It wasn't harsh on Max. It was more of like, that was more of me thinking that Max was already pretty good as a defender, right? I thought he was attacked needlessly last season. And I guess last year, you got to pick somebody on defense to attack, and it's not going to be Jimmy Bam, PJ, or Kyle Lowry, so I guess you're just going to attack Max Strus. Marginally better is good. I think you make a good point. Watch more film. You'll be in more better position more often. You know, he's not a perfect defender, but you can clean some of that stuff up with film work. So yeah, he'll probably get marginally better, but I don't know what, like, realistically we can expect as his upside defensively, other than just the fact that he could be a legit 3-and-D guy in the NBA.
Wow, way to nail it at the buzzer there. look, one last question before we go, because I'm just going to throw this curveball at you here.
Yeah.
Last year, we saw players fall out of the rotation. Who falls out of the rotation this year?
Well, in Spo's world, guys fall in and out of the rotation all the time, right?
So yeah, but who gets in that doghouse and stays in that doghouse? Like, that's a big concern, I think, because Duncan didn't take that leap. Maybe does Max not take that leap? Does Gabe not take that leap? Who do you think falls out?
Well, you got to start with who isn't up to the task defensively. And I also don't really know who's in the rotation. Like, I could see Haywood Highsmith maybe getting early rotation minutes and then falling out, right? And then just not being in it.
Yeah, that's a little different. Like, anything that he gets is above what he got last
season. I'll say, so. I don't think it's going to be any of the guys we've really talked about. It's not going to be any of the core guys, but I could see it being Dwayne Dedmon. And more just because maybe Yurtsevich takes a leap, then maybe Dedmon falls out.
Yep, that was my call exactly. I really think that's the case. Like, it's not a knock on Dwayne in any way. But the spark he provided, he's older now. Can he continue to do it at another level? What's his motivation? He's getting paid regardless. This is his last contract. Let's be honest. He's not going to continue playing beyond this point. It's not that he's old necessarily. I just don't see a lot of teams clamoring for an older 7-footer at this point in his career. He's going to get his money. I wonder what his motivation is going to be. We'll see what happens to start off the season. As always, we're going to continue to provide the best coverage possible. And thanks so much for making Locked On Heat your first listen every day. Just a reminder, you can always listen to Locked On NBA. Make that your second listen every day as well. I'm David Ramil signing off for now. Thanks for joining me, Wes.
Wrap it up, eh?